Our meeting to order. This is the House Committee on Health Care Subcommittee on Health Policy. And I want to open a public hearing on House Bill 2593. Sandy, do you want to just introduce this real quick?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. House Bill 2593 is requesting that we allow a person who is retired under the PERS, Public Employees Retirement System, to be employed full-time by a public employer if they are a nurse or nurse instruction without loss of the retirement benefits. This bill does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Sandy. And Representative Greenlick, as one of the key sponsors, would you like to make some opening comments?
I would. May I do it from here, please?
Yes, you may.
Thank you. I don't think I can get out of those chairs. And I think Senator Manas Anderson may join us. The basic concept of a qualified retirement plan is that when someone retires, then they can't come back to work for the same employer more than half time, more than 10,040 hours. And that's to maintain the integrity and the tax status of a retirement, of any retirement plan. When I worked for Kaiser, we had the same kind of requirement, that if somebody retired, they could come back to work part-time or as a consultant, as I did for a couple of years after I retired. But basically, a retirement plan is to give people who retire income to retire on. However, it turns out to be possible that it is okay to allow a relatively small proportion of retirees to come back on a full-time basis for a variety of reasons without threatening the integrity of the plan. And what this proposal does is exactly that. For a relatively small proportion of people in the public employee retirement system, in other words, nurses working in jobs for which they would otherwise qualify for the retirement system, for PERS, it does allow them to come back. I think before this, the only exception we've made legislatively is to allow teachers in rural school districts who retire under PERS to come back into a PERS-qualified job if it's in the best interest of the school district. We're facing a very difficult shortage problem in nursing, and particularly in the kind of nursing positions that would be that would come under House Bill 2593. That's nurse instructors, as we've heard in our hearings before. The huge problem in getting nurse instructors, there is a huge shortage, and for other difficult state positions, for example, the prison system, which is having an enormous problem keeping RNs employed, and the state mental hospital, for example, which we heard under the new plan, the mental hospital might need 600 additional psychiatric nurse positions in order to manage what they're doing. These kinds of situations create enormous crises. So this proposal would allow simply nurses who have retired under PERS to come back into similar positions as they had before for state agencies or universities or community colleges with up to full time without jeopardizing their existing retirement benefits. Be happy to ask questions, but
thank you, Representative Flores.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Greenlick, can we just dialogue a little bit? Because I really agree with what's trying to be accomplished. My obstacle is someone has retired, they're going back to work full-time, and if they're going back to work full-time, they're obviously not retired. So we're kind of doing a hydraulic on language here.
Yeah, but what can happen now is, let's say we'll hear from OHSU. Let's say there's an OHSU staff nurse that are under PERS. They can retire, take their full PERS pension when they qualify for that pension, or a part of pension, depending on what they qualify, and then go off and work full-time at St. Vincent's or for Kaiser or at Good Samaritan Hospital or at Salem Hospital.
And draw a private and qualify for a private retirement account?
Well, it isn't the issue of qualifying for the retirement account, which they probably can qualify for. It's that it won't jeopardize their PERS benefits because they're not working in a PERS in a government agency. So there isn't anything that stops the nurse now from going to work full time. They go to work as a real estate person, or they can go to work as a nurse, or they can go to medical school and go to work as a doctor. I mean, there's nothing that stops them now. The only thing that they're stopped from now is going to work back in the same kind of jobs they had before, or the same kind of state agencies they had before. And this would allow nurses who want to come back to work to come back to work in what we consider critical areas of the state.
Follow up. Thank you. And I understand that. Just please understand, I'm stumbling with the verbiage somewhat, because if a person is retired and they go back to work, whichever the scenario, as you've described, they're coming out of retirement, so they're no longer retired.
Well, that's true. I mean, let me give myself an example. I worked for Kaiser Permanente for 32 years. I retired at the end of 32 years from that position. It was an executive position. I was able to cash out both of my pension options and get a fairly large amount of cash, which went and rolled into an IRA, and I went to work at OHSU as a department chair. I was 60 years old, lots of time to work. I wasn't retired. I had simply retired from that job, as I was entitled to under the pension system at that time. I became a department chair at OHSU, got some retirement benefits, which I mostly waived. In fact, for the first 5 years, I waived the salary. I wasn't interested in the salary. I just had a full-time department chair position at OHSU on $1 a year or something, because that's all I wanted. I retired from OHSU. I got a modest payout, something like $90,000 after working there 10 years, which I contributed back to OHSU to create a scholarship, but I retired, took the money, and contributed it, and then I came to work here. And I've retired twice now.
But you would have had the salary in place for more.
Well, but now I've retired twice, and now I'm working as a legislator. In the first session, I was under PERS, and the second session, I was under something else. In this session, I'm under a third thing, and now they told me I have to retire from PERS. Although I can't figure out how to fill out the form, so it sort of stopped me. But I mean, I've retired twice, and I hope to retire a couple more times. It's fun to retire. You get presents, you know, you have a party. It's really...
That's Gary Wilde.
But I don't intend to stop working, and I never did intend to stop working, but I've drawn benefits from these various retirement plans along the way, and that's essentially what we're talking about here. PERS employees can retire at various ages, at various amounts of service, and they're entitled to retire and to draw a pension, and they will. They don't have to never work again. They just have to never work again more than 1,040 hours in a position that's covered by PERS. And this would allow them, rather than having to go work for Providence, they could stay working at OHSU, or rather than having them go work at Linfield College Nursing School, to allow them to keep working at Clackamas Community College in the job there.
Last follow-up?
Sure.
Thank you. So mentioning the 1,040 hours then, that's not considered full-time employment.
No, that's right now they can work 1,039 hours.
So we're saying over...
This changes that to allow full-time employment.
Up to full-time, yeah. Anything above that?
Anything above.
1040 and above.
Anything above the 1040. That's deleting that section that talks about 1040.
That's section 1.
Oh, that's
a... Or 2, section 2.
Right, exempts from subsection 2, essentially. Representative Flores, additional?
Okay, so just for clarification, thank you, Madam Chair, then, we are saying that they can retire, receive their PERS retirement benefit, and go back to work or come out of retirement and work full-time and in a PERS position, PERS benefit position. Is that correct?
If they're nurses, that is correct.
If they're nurses.
Yes.
And will they then be drawing or eligible to receive further PERS benefits accrue to their...
I don't know the answer to that, but my guess is no.
We don't address it here. Is that what you're saying?
I think it's addressed by PERS rules. I think somebody else may be able to answer that better.
And we have someone from PERS, so maybe you want to come up. I have Representative Bonamici and then Representative Bruin.
Right. Thank you, Madam Chair. My comment has nothing to do with the definitional differences between retired, because I think really that's what we're looking at when Representative Greenlick was talking about retiring from a job and Representative Flores was talking about retiring in general. But my concern, and is basically for the record, is that the confusing way that this is drafted. And I don't think it's necessarily this bill, but it's this section sets out the requirement in Section 2, and then it has several exemptions. The first one's in 3, and that's for teachers. And then 4 has several more exceptions, and then there are sub-exceptions under that. And then 5 and 6 have additional exceptions, and then by this bill we're adding number 7. So I just, for the record, would prefer to see this more clearly drafted so that the basic requirement is in Section 2, and then all the exceptions are listed together rather than in sections and subsections. I just find it confusing.
Well, it does look like the ones that are... Thank you for mentioning it. Under 4, that might be all law enforcement exemptions. I don't know if that's how this is... So they're separated by categories, maybe? I don't know.
Well, it looks like they're just separated. 3 is teachers in small districts. 4 is sheriffs, police, correctional, public safety.
Fire.
But 5 is National Guard. And then 6 is road assessment districts. And I just think that could be more clearly drafted for practitioners.
Well, we can ask for
I understand the LC is kind of busy nowadays.
So right.
aesthetics here. Let me take Representative Bruin's question.
Real quick, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. Representative, I'm just curious, and maybe you're not the right person to ask. Maybe it's one of the other testifiers, but what is the nurse pool we're talking about here? We're talking about OHSU nurses. We're talking about, I assume, of course, the state mental hospital nurses if they have such. Are we talking about...
Corrections.
Correction nurses.
We're talking about nursing instructors at state at PERS covered institutions like the community colleges.
Okay.
And
do we have any idea what the in rough figures how many nurses we're talking about here? I mean, I think the point that you know we have a nursing shortage is a great point, but I just like to get a feel for how big the pool is we're talking about.
Maybe we'll hear that.
Yeah, maybe one of our folks.
Maybe Brian will have
something to say about that. Other questions for Representative Greenlick before we go to... All right, thank you.
Thank you for allowing me to testify from here.
Oh, you're welcome. So we have with us today, we have Steve Delaney, who I've heard is with the PERS administration, and then Brian DeLashman with the Oregon Nurses Association. We'll start off with you, Steve. I don't know if you want to answer a question or just comment or...
Madam Chair, a response to Representative Flores, who had asked if the person would continue to accrue additional benefits as a reemployed retiree.
Oh, Steve, could we get your name?
My apologies. Yes, Steve Delaney, Deputy Director of Oregon PERS.
Thank you.
And the answer is no. They do not continue as a retired member. They do not accrue additional retirement benefits during that period. So they retain their benefit. Is paid to them, but they're simply getting salary from the employer. Nothing is being paid into PERS during that time period.
Thank you.
Sure. I'm available. There are a number of issues. I think generally they were responded to correctly. I think the only other clarification I might make is there was a comment about would they come out of retirement in this. That wouldn't be the terminology we would use. No, they remain retired during that period in which they're offering this service.
Could I ask you a question?
Yes, Representative. Well, retired from PERS definition, from the PERS.
From PERS, as defined in PERS, correct.
Okay. Representative Freeman?
Yeah, I was referring to the notion of a, I forget what the term is, a qualified pension plan or something.
Correct.
And could you talk about how there is this kind of limitation on the ability to qualify?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Greenlick. The federal government is concerned for a qualified plan that there are limitations on the reemployment of retirees. Clearly, they want to get their money at some point, and their benefits are accruing tax-free during this period, so they want to know that a person is going to retire and start drawing these benefits, and they get their cut, as it were. What they specify in federal statute is that they're concerned if a person were to get benefits, if they were to get reduced benefits and be able to work unlimited hours. They're not concerned if an individual has reached what we would call normal retirement age, has an unreduced benefit. They're free to work as much as they want from a federal viewpoint. It's whatever the plan allows for. If you look at this bill, you will see we take into account the federal consideration already on line page 2, lines 12 and 13, that rather cryptic language there that you wouldn't have any idea what that means a lot to us. Lines 12 and 13 means that if the person is retiring under a reduced benefit, that's what ORS 238-280 provides for, they cannot take advantage of this language. They could not work unlimited hours. They would have to remain under the 1040. So there's where we take into consideration federal concerns over the qualification of the plan.
Explain to them how somebody could take a reduced by returning early.
And the issue is, how does someone take a reduced benefit? Normal retirement age for PERS is age 58. For Tier 1, it's age 60. For Tier 2, and it's age 65 for the new Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan. All three plans allow a person to retire at age 55 if they so wish. That's an early retirement. But PERS will reduce their benefit by a percentage, normally 8% for each year that they are leaving early from their normal retirement age. So if you could go out 58 and choose to go out 55, we're going to reduce your benefit by 24% of where it would have been at age 58. Federal government would consider that a reduced benefit and would not allow the person to take advantage of these unlimited hours as far as a reemployed retiree.
I'm sure that clarifies everything.
Madam Chair, mm-hmm. Representative Bonamici, do you want Steve to explain this language that includes all the limitations while he's at the table?
But he might as well stay.
Representative Morris, do you have any?
Well, I was ready to swing out of the saddle, Madam Chair, when you made that statement, Steve, about...
Well, watch that.
Well, they're still retired, but not coming out of retirement to still retirement, but they're still going back into full-time employment. So I just find that a little disingenuous in how we're crafting the verbiage here. So, but that it is what it is.
And I just have a clarification. So from what you're saying, with the different tiers, 58, 60, and 65, if those people are retiring at those ages in their tiers would be eligible for this. Anyone who retired earlier from whatever tier they were in, earlier than allowed, they would not be able to, they'd be subject to the 1040 rule.
Madam Chair, that is correct with one clarification. As with all things in PERS, there are caveats, as you will learn. There is a provision within PERS that allows a person to retire with 30 years of service regardless of age. Okay. That is also considered unreduced from a federal standpoint.
Whichever comes first,
correct.
Basically.
Okay. Correct.
Thank you. You might want to stay there. That would be great. Brian.
For the record, Brian DeLeichmann, representing the Oregon Nurses Association. There's been so many things swirling around here, but let me just touch on a couple of things. The issue that the chair just asked about, the full retirement age or the 30 years, the PERS system was set up so it was to encourage people not to leave the system, draw their money out, and then go back to work in the PERS system again. So that's why the feds have the same rule. You don't qualify for this particular portion by saying, okay, well, I'm going to leave at 45 years of age, consider that quote-unquote retirement, take a reduced benefit, and then go right back to work for the same employer. So the encouragement of the PERS system and the federal system is that the people work until their normal retirement age. And this just only impacts those people that have worked to their normal retirement age, either their age or the 30 years of service, and then decide to come back. And I can give you a couple of examples. Let me start first by saying that the concepts that are included in this bill, and actually there's a Senate bill too, 342, same verbiage, with exception, I think, of educator versus instructor. They've used two different terms, is the same concept. That will be contained in a broader bill that deals with the nursing shortage as a package. And you may have heard in this committee a little bit about the nursing shortage. That is one component that we're obviously very interested in. The issue that we hear most often is with educators, and you're well aware, you've heard, the aging population of nurses, the aging population of nurse educators. It is a substantial concern that we have not enough people to fill in those slots. So what do you do during that gap period? Is there some way that we can get us through the next 10 to 15 years that will allow the nurse educators that are there that are qualified to continue to be productive, turn out more nurses so we can fill that gap, and ultimately they can fully retire. Well, there's a couple of ways you can do that. Either you can open the floodgates up and bring a whole bunch of new people in, or you have to have some people retain in the system to fill that gap. Well, the problem with opening the floodgates and having all these new people in the schools is you don't have the nurse educators to teach those people. You have a shortage of nurse educators because they're aging. So you have to have kind of a combination of both. And the concept that we've come up with is we want to encourage these folks to continue to work, be productive, and it could be not full-time. And again, keep in mind that you've got the 1040 rule. We're not talking about people working full-time. We're just saying you can exceed the 1040 rule. So it could be three-fifths time. It could be five-eighths time. But it'd be more than half time. Let me give you another example. The KCI Center up at OHSU. I think there is a group of 8 or 10 nurses up there. None of them, as in my understanding, work full time. They all work part time. But they don't know how many hours they're going to work. They're on basically a surgical team that they go and fill in on surgeries when it's needed. And they don't know until the end of the year whether or not they're going to work 10:30, 10:27, or 10:57. So they're reaching now an age, and my understanding is the average age of this group of nurses up there is older than the rest of the nurses in the population, 54, 55. So they're saying, who's going to fill in for us? We'd like to continue to work, but some of us want to retire and then maybe work as needed. Well, again, they wouldn't know how many hours they're going to be working because it's an on-demand job for those surgeries. So this allows the flexibility for the employer and the employee to not have to worry about, have I exceeded my 1040? If I do, then all of a sudden my PERS payments stop and I'm back in the PERS system again. I'm unretired. This just means they can continue to draw their PERS benefit and they can continue to work and not have to worry about that 1040 rule and exceeding it, which they have very little, if any, control over how many hours they're going to work. So I think most of the rest of the questions have been answered. The one additional bit is that because of 2003, the PERS changes that we had, if this was not allowed and you had a nurse, let's say, that went out in 2003 because all the changes, and there were folks that retired under the PERS system in 2003 because of the changes that were occurring. If they wanted to come back and work full-time now, they would have a break in service of more than 6 months. They would come back and their retirement would stop and they would be placed in the new Tier 3 or OPSERP retirement plan, which is not the plan that many of them retired out of, Tier 1. So there's not even an option for them now, if they wanted to come back to full-time, to re-enter the working system and re-enter the tier and PERS that they were already in the first place. So we believe this is an option that has some merit, has a lot of merit, and we would like to have it as either a component of a larger bill or move this forward, and we'll sort them all out as we get toward the end of whether or not the entire bill goes forward or we're just getting bits and pieces. But I'm available for any kind of questions.
Why the question?
Go right ahead.
No, sorry, Madam Chair. Please proceed. Well, I just would like the definition of public employer. Someone brought that up, and so that's
one.
Colleges. That could be county health departments, theoretically. Yes, no?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I did write myself a note. What is the RN pool here, and what's the estimate?
Oh, right.
OHSU, I think we're talking 1,300, 1,400. I'm looking at Martin now. I think our RN membership, and it's entire membership at the Hill, is between 1,300 and 1,400 the last time I saw. And then you're talking about county health departments. You're talking about the institutions, the School of Nursing, which is OHSU, and then has the three satellite schools at Eastern, Southern, and OIT. And I know that they're here. And then you would have community college instructors. And then you have an odd little definition. There are some public district hospitals in this state.
Newport
is one of them. I think there's at least one east of the mountains. but I don't even recall whether or not they're PERS or not. I think they had the option to be in PERS or not be in PERS, and I'm not sure that they're in PERS. Mm-hmm. But technically, a public employee that could potentially qualify, that would have been one. The other point, Madam Chair, that Representative Greenlick brought up that I think is very cogent here is a nurse who retires from a public employer already has the option to retire, draw their PERS employment or their PERS retirement, and go to work for Emanuel or Providence or anybody else. So it's a distinct disadvantage for any public sector employer of nurses, including the education system, the county health departments, and the community colleges, for them to be barred from coming back to something that they may have already had some experience in be doing. So what you're saying is if you want to go back to work and work more than half time, you have to go back to work for Emanuel. You can't go and teach at a community college, because then you're disqualified, you're unretired, and your retirement stops.
Thank you. Representative Ford?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Brian, because that really did help clarify, I think, my concerns, because you said it's not necessarily full-time. They can work anything above what...
1040, which is half-time.
1040. And that having been thrown off by just the caption that pertains or states that it's relating to full-time employment. So, thank you.
You're welcome.
Can I ask Brian one more?
Yes, you may.
We do have a way to... I seem to remember, and I support your bigger package. I think that's a very important package. But we do have a way at the end of the session, if there's a piece of one and then there's overlap on another, we have a way to put those together, right? And that's done after the session's over.
Madam Chair, Representative Greenlick, yes, obviously there is that merge of the bills that they pass. We would be very interested in making sure that the language is the same in whether it's a standalone bill here, it's a part of the entire package, so that we didn't have to worry about that merge at the end and which one passed last and whether that tweaked it somehow. But there is that process.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I actually have a question, because we did pass a bill off the floor today that Representative Girard commented on, that it was a six-month. Could you explain that and how that would jive or not jive with the
Yeah, Madam Chair, and actually there was some misunderstanding in that questioning there. That bill applied only to individuals who take a total lump sum option. And it, in the discussion, sounded like it was applying to all PERS retirees, which is not the case. But PERS, it said, for this select group, of which there's not many of them, perhaps 1 to 10% in a given year of retirees go under this option, we've said it's very complicated when they return. We'd prefer to just stick by the statute, which was 6 months, and then you can return. That's what that bill was dealing with on the floor today.
Thank you. Appreciate that. All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. And then we have Sandy Tice.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I am Sandy Tice, and I'm Interim Dean of the School of Nursing, Oregon Health and Science University. I will be speaking today about the bill we've just been talking about, House Bill 2593, which would exempt persons retired under the PERS system, and I'm not going to go into that. You've talked quite a bit about what it would do. To provide the context, about 4 years ago, the PERS guidelines were changed so that it was advantageous for faculty to retire at that time. Had they continued to work, their benefits would have declined unless they worked for another 4 years. Many made the decision to retire then, years before they might have wanted or needed to retire. Many nursing faculty across the state in both associate degree and baccalaureate degree programs took advantage of this opportunity. OHSU has hired several of these people to teach, but only, as we mentioned, at 49% or the 1040 hours. Some of them would like to teach more, but they are restricted by the PERS guidelines from doing so. Just last week, I had a conversation with an advanced practice nurse who works for Multnomah County and therefore is part of PERS. This person thought it would be wonderful to retire from the county and teach at OHSU. physically, the job would be less demanding, so the nurse would be able to reduce the physical demands, but still contribute to the nursing profession. Let me provide you some information on the faculty shortage to show why these experienced, talented, and willing faculty are urgently needed. In 2005, American schools of nursing were unable to admit 150,000, get my numbers right here, qualified students to nursing educational programs because of shortages.
Thanks. Perfect. That's
150,000. 150,000 nationwide.
Thank you, Manager.
74% of schools identify faculty shortages as a reason for not accepting students. We will never be able to overcome the shortage of nurses to provide direct care unless we address the issue of faculty shortage. In 2006, 1,390 faculty vacancies were identified in this country. Nursing faculty members have the same aging problem as nurses providing care and all of us. The average age of doctorally prepared faculty is approximately 55 years, of master's prepared faculty, 54. A master's degree is required to teach. We will not be teaching forever. The average age at retirement for faculty members is 62.5. A wave of faculty retirements is expected over the next decade. In Oregon, 15% of community college faculty and 23% of baccalaureate faculty are expected to retire within the next 5 years. By 2010, an estimated 65 faculty positions will be vacant in Oregon simply due to retirements. To increase numbers of students, more faculty will be needed. One major problem for us in recruiting faculty is the salary we are able to pay with the funds we receive and raise. Dr. Joan Fitzgerald, who directs the graduate program of Law, Policy, and Society at Northeastern University, noted that the faculty shortage, quote, problem is mainly low pay for teachers of nursing. The average salary in the U.S. for a master's prepared nurse practitioner in 2006 was over $72,000. For a master's prepared faculty member, the average was $56,000. At OHSU, the salary differential means MS-prepared advanced practice nurses working in the hospital system on average make $30,000 a year more than do people with the same educational preparation working as teaching faculty. Some examples of recent strategies that have been developed to combat the shortage include a program in California to provide scholarships to students from underrepresented backgrounds who plan to become nursing faculty. Independence Blue Cross in Philadelphia established a scholarship program for future nurse faculty members. There are federal loan funds, 85% of which can be forgiven for students who teach for at least 4 years. There is a federal program called the Graduate Assistance in Areas of National Needs that provides funding for doctoral students who plan to become faculty members. OHSU has applied for these funds for next year. Dr. Fitzgerald describes the federal programs as, quote, feeble and underfunded, excuse me, noting that 82% of applicants for loans and 94% for scholarships were rejected because of insufficient funding. At OHSU, we have new programs that will grow baccalaureate-prepared nurses, the foundation on which education to become a faculty member grows. These programs include the Oregon Consortium for Nursing Education, a new accelerated baccalaureate program for students with a previous BA or BS degree in another field, and that's the most rapidly growing segment of entry into nursing. Many of these nurses who earn a BS in nursing will provide direct care, but many others will enter graduate education to become care providers as midwives, nurse practitioners, clinical nurse specialists, or nurse anesthetists. Some of those will become faculty. We are also developing a master's program in nursing education with a focus either in community health or gerontology. Graduates of this program will be well prepared to teach at community colleges. Some graduates of both our master's programs will continue to get a doctorate and teach advanced students. They are our future faculty members. We take advantage of every program we can, but we need your assistance. Giving us the ability to rehire our experienced faculty will help us bridge the time until the upturn noticed in nursing school enrollments over the past few years will begin to generate more faculty to take over and support increased numbers of students to become practicing nurses and nursing faculty. Thank you. Are there any questions of me?
Thank you. That's really helpful information.
Thank you.
Any questions? It's really good to understand the connection between, you know, producing new nurses and the instruction end of it, and that's just incredibly helpful. Thank you.
It is.
You kind of don't think about it.
You do hear so much about the nursing shortage, but it is the faculty shortage that really is one of the things that's kind of bottling up that pipeline. And while this would not provide real large numbers, I don't think. I think it will provide enough that it will make it would make it worthwhile to have this ability.
Absolutely, because we're losing some of those folks to the private sector.
We are.
Mm-hmm.
We are.
Well, thank you very much.
Questions?
No, I think
thank you.
We're good. Thank you very much. That is it on our list of folks who want to testify. Anybody out there? All right.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make a comment about I definitely support this. I think the nursing shortage is an issue that we need to deal with, but I don't think it's unique to this particular field. And I think that we need to not lose sight of the big picture, which is valuing the noble profession of teaching. And I can assure you that in my profession, there are law professors who make a lot less than many lawyers. And I think we lose good teachers in K-12 education as well who can go work in the private sector and make more money. So I just don't want us to lose sight of the value of teaching in all areas. But it is important to make sure that we address this, and I support this bill.
Thank you. Any comments? All right. Seeing none, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2593. And we'll see if we can get that scheduled for a work session pretty quickly, unless there's any concerns about that. I'm not seeing any, so we'll get that scheduled. Could you review our calendar for... Oh, okay. If I have everyone's attention, and then we'll... Thank you. Thanks, Sandy.
Sure. Why don't you include the full committee in that review?
Madam Chair and Representative Greenlee, if I fall short of my memory, you'll help me, right? Thank you, Madam Chair. Thursday, in the subcommittee, we are hearing our first Senate Bill 82. It is prohibits the dispensing and selling of ophthalmic contact lenses without a valid prescription. So that's up for a public hearing and a possible work session. And then we are working on a joint meeting with the House Education Committee for next Tuesday. Have not gotten confirmation from the Education Committee to do a public hearing on the minimum standards for food and beverages sold in public schools. Mm-hmm. So stay tuned for that. We are looking to have that joint meeting during our time slot. But depending,
we're trying to do that,
but you know, yet to be determined once we get the chairs.
Derek is calling around because he called me as a member of the Education Committee.
Okay.
If we get the majority of the Education Committee, we're going to try to
we'll do
it during
a joint. And again, we're trying to do it during our time slot in this room. So stay tuned for that. That might hopefully won't it may change, but hopefully not too badly. Full committee tomorrow, or a subcommittee tomorrow, is a continuation of the joint resolution on the access to health care, and then that will be up on Friday in the full committee for a work session, and we will have some introduction of committee bills on Friday as well.
Are we going to work some of the bills
out
of this committee as well?
Though I don't believe this subcommittee is going to work. We might have a Senate bill to the full on Friday.
Upple, is that going to be?
But the UPL is from our other subcommittee. That will be a work session on Friday also, sir. Yes.
They'll be requesting several committee bills
right.
that we'll be hearing. I expect maybe a half a dozen or something. We won't be hearing, but we'll be
introducing.
So that's this week.
Voting to introduce.
Great. Just a reminder, if any of you folks have any LCs that you want to introduce under the health care committee, this Friday is our last day because the deadline is Monday, and our LCs need to be introduced in the full committee, not a sub.
Okay.
So if you have anything in the hopper, be sure and run it by Representative Greenlick, and we'll be sure it gets on for this Friday.
Great. Thanks, Sandy. And we're adjourned.